attention, can I have your attention, please? Here in the city offices, and it's time for the city council workshop. It's Tuesday, September 8th, 2015, in the council conference room. Please rise and join me with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire.
Here.
Councilmember DeLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Nobile.
Here.
Councilmember Shipley.
Here.
Mayor Mannes had another commitment. He will be here shortly.
Thank you, Bob. Item number one, agenda, presentation from the Palm Coast Arts Foundation. Any artistic people here?
We actually met with the representatives of the Art Foundation and our park team. And as a result of those meetings and the request of City Council to incorporate a restroom, we realized we had more questions we had answers for you, which is not a good thing. So we asked that they delay their presentation to figure out exactly how the restrooms get incorporated in. You can see that, and you can start get a better feel for what this first phase is all about. So we're asking for this to be delayed. It was already on the calendar, so it got plugged in.
Council questions, comments?
Delayed, but it will still be in this year's budget.
Yes, it is in the budget. The presentation delayed, but they're very pleased with the idea that the restrooms are being expedited. So presentation delayed, project being expedited.
That's there aren't many trees to go behind over there.
Nope.
Gently.
A lot of water,
yeah. And item number two, a presentation on the Flagler County Draft Manatee Protection Plan Update. Mr. Landon.
Vice Mayor, this is really one of, we're going to delay this one. So this is the mayor's most knowledgeable.
Defined thing.
He's asked that number two and number three, if we could skip over those. And I'm not seeing number four. Sorry about this. What's that?
Not a problem.
Let's go. If we can go to number five, I'd appreciate it. Can we just go on down until the mayor gets here, and I got the rest of the staff here, just messing the schedule up. I really would like all five of you to be here for number three, and number two is what the mayor requested. And number four, my staff is thinking, oh, I've got plenty of time. I don't have to be here. So we go to number five.
All right. Unless any of the council objects, we will move to agenda item number five, a resolution confirming the designation of the code enforcement staff to serve as the clerk to the red light camera hearing officer.
This is attorney's thing.
Good morning, Council.
Good morning, Mr. Reichert.
This is a follow-up on a process that we have already been using and has already been approved by a resolution, series of resolutions historically. This simply clarifies it and reiterates what we've already been doing. One of the parts in the Florida statutes, the Mark Lindell Act, that simply says that when you use the hearing process, the code enforcement hearing officer process, which we do, then you have to designate certain specific staff, which you have done two times before, but we're going to do it again. So this is not, I wouldn't even call it a cleanup, it's just a reiteration of what we've already been doing.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Reichman, but there was a time when the clerk was somewhere else, either over in Gail Wadsworth's office or ATS did it. And this changed that. Is
in 2013. That is correct, yeah. Vice Mayor. And the specific process was, there's been a series of amendments to the Mark Lindell Act. And the one in 2013 was the one that clarified the process for hearing officers for the notices of violations to allow those that have received them to request a hearing before the hearing officer. And this was just more of a clerical. It's a clerical requirement that was included.
So what kind of action is the council being asked to take, or will be asked to take here
just to agree with it?
The statute simply says that the appointment, which has already been done, that the designation of the city staff be done by resolution. So the legislature felt that it was, for some reason, important to have the appointment of city staff to be the support staff for these hearing officers be done by resolution. So
we're going to, at some point in time, be asked to confirm that what we've already been doing is what we're supposed to do.
Yes, next week. We'll be asking you to do this resolution.
Okay, thank you.
And that's it.
Council questions, comments? Mr. Landon, are we, five red light cameras or three? How many red light cameras do we have? I think we were supposed to have five, but two of them are delayed because of the...
We had five. Two of them came down because of construction. Right. I don't know the status of those two. If they're still down or if they're back up. So we'll get that answer for you.
We're supposed to be at five, though, right?
Yeah.
Right. Contracts. But with the construction, right. They're in construction.
We can put two in and then we'll switch them out.
Yeah.
Agenda item number 6, a resolution approving a 1-year price agreement with Harris Culvert Incorporated to purchase various types of drainage pipe.
This is just annual contract, so that when we need pipe, this is who we go to, and Harris was the low bidder.
These are the big concrete culvert pipes?
Yeah, a variety of pipes, as I understand it, but yes.
Okay.
A variety of sizes, depending on the...
Council questions or comments? You know, we may end up taking an early lunch or something.
Yeah.
Agenda item number 7, resolution approving the purchase of a 2015 Caterpillar Model 906M compact wheel loader piggybacking the Florida Sheriff's Association contract number 14-12-0904 with Rain Power Corporation.
This is, once again, a budgeted item. It's actually a new piece of equipment for a zero liquid discharge plant.
And that's where it will be dedicated to.
Right, right. So it's part of that, just something they need as part of that new plant operation.
And it is budgeted for.
Yes.
Council questions or comments? You know how to drive a Caterpillar?
No, sir.
Okay, good. I need you. Agenda item number 8, a resolution approving a 3-year contract with the Florida Department of Corrections for the use of supervised inmate labor work crews.
This is a program that we've had for a number of years. I think it was started in 08, and then we added one in 11. Total price for both crews is just under $58,000. I think it's a crew of 6, so you know, say the least, very cost-efficient way. This is a crew that does the ditch maintenance primarily. A lot of work out in the ditches, I guess you might say. Some of you at least have seen videos.
I think it's six inmates plus a guard supervisor.
Definitely. The city provided the van and the equipment and those type of things. That was kind of that one-time cost. Very efficient. In fact, we would like another crew, and if we get another crew, we might be able to mow the ditches more often. Don't see a downside to this. These are all of the inmates that don't have a lot to lose, mm-hmm. or have a lot to lose to wander off, etc. So it works out very well.
Are these do these inmates come from county jail or from further?
State. This is Tomoka.
Okay. And we have talked about the possibility of adding a third. I know you've engaged them a little bit, and there was some concerns about you start getting into candidates.
Too deep into the inmate population, uh-huh. Yes. That's really would be their call, not ours. They would know. Obviously, we do not. If you would like, we can increase those conversations, so see if we can't get the ditches mowed more often.
Well, to Jason's point, in the last city council meeting, we talked about whether or not if some of the waterways needed more than twice a year attendance, how would we go about doing it? And this certainly would seemed to be a method that could be used.
Okay, I will.
Well, one of the things I do get phone calls when they see the, when my residents see the state prisoners sign in the back of the, so I would like to be able to ensure them that we're at a first tier prisoner instead of somebody who's done anything
really bad. You know, hopefully these are writing bad checks and those kind of
and the guy has a shotgun who's watching him, so
yes. From my house.
We have and this isn't just here, but never had a bad experience. I had another place. One of them started wandering down the street. literally, just wandering down the street and found out, well, it was about time for him to get out, and he didn't want to get out, so he knew that if he started wandering down the street, he could stay there for a couple more years. So that was the only experience I had. But
he wanted to go watch Old Brother Rock.
Yeah. So,
you know, but every state, I know when I lived in Georgia, the convicts are always out on the road, and they still wear striped suits there with the little striped pillbox hat. You can see him a mile away.
These guys actually come out to the yard and actually work with our crews, and it's been an excellent program. So
the other thing is that, and alluding to what Jason said, is there are work release programs that the sheriff uses. I know all the work that I've done at the VFW, they've always had somebody that's a prisoner that comes down there, and they have to clock in and clock out, and they're scrubbing floors and cleaning the grill and that kind of stuff. So they haven't been much of a problem. They've had some rough-looking folks in there, too. Okay, any other comments or questions about the prison? Agenda item number 9, resolution approving a price agreement with Argos Ready Mix, LLC, for concrete as needed. As needed by whom?
By us. This is one of those when we do our paths and well, if we have any concrete work at all, this is who we would call. We went out to bid. We only got the one bid. Mm. It is up by $4 a cubic yard. Mm-hmm. That's not surprising considering the fact that all construction materials right now we're finding the cost of construction is up. So we think this is a fair price, and we'll ask you to approve it next week.
I spoke to a couple of people about this. They said it was an excellent price, but they were surprised that we would use 4,000 PSI for sidewalks because it has less aggregate and it's especially in Florida, it's more prone to cracking because of how quickly it cures. So, do we have someone here who can talk about why we use 4,000 PSI concrete?
I'm afraid someone's going to trip.
That could happen.
Mr. Richard, you're used to getting a whole lot of...
All right, well,
we'll get the question answered, though. We've been doing this for some time.
I mean, I had a couple people there, and they both were really surprised that we've used. Now, I imagine it's not just for sidewalks; it's for other stuff that we're doing. So maybe that's why we do more of something than something else, and that's why we use it. But
okay.
I'd like to know,
we're
using.
We'll get an answer for you before next week.
What would these people recommend?
I didn't ask that. I mean, I think it depends on what you're doing, you know, and maybe we just. At one time, we were doing a lot of something, so we've always been ordering 4,000 PSI, and maybe that's not exactly what we need.
Anyway,
Jack?
Well, Mike, if you're going to come on up, you're welcome to the...
We typically use 4,000 PSI concrete, like our structures and such, but generally when we specify stuff like that, it's not to exceed 4,000 PSI, or as a minimum 4,000 PSI, so you have some latitude as to select the type of concrete you need.
Okay.
It's not going to be more than that.
Right. So here where it says sidewalks and other facilities, but when you spec out the sidewalk, you might be specing out different concrete.
Yeah, might be specing out different concrete, 3,000 or 2,500 even.
Right.
So we use this as for bidding purposes, so it's
right.
Apples and apples.
If you go to like the tops of our weirs, we generally specify 4,000 to 5,000 PSI concrete. Mm-hmm. But it's really thick.
Right.
And massive.
Right. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, folks, at this point in time, we can do one of several things.
We're ready for number four, if you don't mind if we go to that one.
All right. Agenda item number four, a resolution approving a contract with S.E. Klein Construction Incorporated for removal of the spoil island in the Lehigh Canal east of the Old Kings Road Bridge. Start shoveling.
This is, once again, something that's in our stormwater budget. I think it's, as you can see, it's been out there for quite some time. It's starting to grow trees. If we're not careful, we might have historic trees out there if we wait too much longer. No, this is actually very serious because, and Mike will describe why it's important to remove this island of spoil. It's in the middle of the canal. So, Mike.
How big is the island, Mr. Lyman?
Mike can help you out with the details.
Okay, Mike, help us.
Morning, council members.
Morning.
The current island size is probably about 2,500 to 3,000 square feet.
Okay.
It's been out there quite a while. It's a result of construction and this is where it's located. It's just east of Old Kings Road Bridge. I'm sure some of you have spotted it. It's very difficult to see in this aerial, so I kind of outlined it in yellow there for you. And it's the result of the original L4 weir, which imploded back in early 2000, washed out, and was repaired. The Lehigh Canal, remember when it was concrete lined? We had some erosion underneath that concrete that ended up down there. And the most recent L4 near disaster a couple of years ago. All that ends up down here. Why it's important to remove this, and the reason we kind of put this on the target list, is because we were down there doing the Old Kings Road bridge abutment repairs with the expanding foam and all that. We were noticing that may have contributed to the problem there at the bridge, and it may be contributing to further problems down the road where we have a high flow of water through there, and it starts redirecting that flow against the banks of the canal, and we'll try to do what water does. It naturally starts serpentining and creating oxbow lakes and stuff like that. And while that's fine in the natural environment, like a river, it's not necessarily a good thing when you have a straight line canal. It's intended to get water from point A to point B as rapidly as possible.
Captain Mike, how would you remove it? What's the procedure?
What we'd do is we'd probably bench down the north side to where we can get a traco down there and kind of build a dam out to it while water going around one side, and you just start digging it out from the hard. It's not going to be a pretty project.
And then what do you do when you dig it out and haul it away?
Yes, sir.
Does that affect any homes in that area?
No, ma'am.
It can affect homes if it starts meandering. In other words,
right.
You can actually see the curve. And if the water takes that route, bounces off of this bank, eventually that bank will start eroding. And then that's where you have hidden lakes over there. So
what happens is it'll start eroding one side, and then it'll start building up on the other side, eroding over there, and it just starts naturally forming this S shape, which could endanger hidden lakes eventually.
Are there any other structures of this nature in our water runoff system?
Not this bad, no, sir.
We had one just to the east side of Belterre. One we just, the PA1, by the Catholic Church, that we had to dig out because of when that weir blew out, it deposited. And we did that a few years ago, but that was quite a smaller.
So you're going to put earth moving equipment come in from the bank side. How deep is that water?
22 feet deep.
Okay.
According to the design plans. I haven't put my waders on there and tested it out.
Probably not a good idea to do so.
There's a big alligator likes that little area right there. He's a big one.
He chases me every time I ride my bike up Lehigh.
You ride your bike up to
Lehigh.
Oh.
Not in the canal.
So any other questions on the ball pile itself? The way we did this, it was kind of an unusual way. We actually went out for a request for qualifications and a proposal on how you would do it, and then the best price. Kind of put all the contractors in the same room and say, well, how would you do this? And, you know, if you're going to... First of all, I made sure they're qualified. Mm-hmm. Said, okay, how are you going to do it? And, okay, give us a price on how you would do it that way. And we had two responses. Of course, Klein Construction was the best price by far, mainly because they're only charges like $2,500 a cubic yard for removal, for a maximum of 2,500 cubic yards. And I think R&E Site Development was quoting us like $150 to $165 a cubic yard for removal. I think old Hap has a secret hidey hole. He's going to put all his materials. He'd have to travel too far.
So Klein Construction can do this for less than a third of what the outfit in Lake Butler can do, and that cost is a firm cost if we sign a contract?
Yes, sir.
So if they run into something that they don't foresee, it's still 98.3.
Well, I did ask them to provide a quote for if it exceeds the 2,500 cubic yards. I actually figured it out mathematically as be about 1,800 cubic yards, but I told everybody that it's going to be about 2,500 cubic yards, and to give us a quote for anything over that. And it's $25 a cubic yard for removal over that amount.
Okay.
Well, the cost is probably the difference of them being local. They probably know the area better than someone who throws in more money in the bid because they don't know the area.
Right.
They certainly know the waterways because they do most of the weird
stuff. It's the hall.
It's having a place to put it.
Yes.
And that place not being very far.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's
the hall in it there. Yeah.
See, the dry stuff can go there right away. Right. The wet stuff has to go up on the bank and have it dried out for a bit before it can be loaded again into a truck and trucked off to their disposal site.
How can we take steps to see that this doesn't happen again in other waterways that we maintain?
Well, we've done a pretty good job at replacing all the weirs that might cause this in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty confident that we won't have this problem again.
You're always going to have some erosion, you know, whether it's just off the banks, etc. The key to it is when the weirs blow out. But Mr. McGuire, this is you've already taken those steps as a city council with the capital improvements we're doing in the stormwater to replace the weirs before they blow out. That's the key to it, and because when we have them blow out, that is just all just being deposited. You know, we've had this in other places. By the Yacht Club was a good example of that one, a saltwater canal, and the boats couldn't get by.
Are we going to, Mr. Landon, take this money from other stormwater projects that we've already budgeted for?
Nope, this was in the budget.
This is budgeted for 2016.
All right. Council questions, comments?
The reason I bring it to you right now is because I like to get started as soon as the fiscal year begins. And the only way to do that is to present it now.
So how come you're not out there in your waders?
Pardon me, sir?
Why aren't you out there in your waders with the depth meter and stuff?
Well, I have to get it all approved first.
Okay. Is that it?
This is the 2016 it's a proposed budget. We budget $110,000 for this job. So clients came in at $98,325, so we have a little extra to play with in case you run into some extra stuff.
Right. Okay.
And the construction window starts October 1st, or as soon as the council approves it, and goes to January 1st. Hopefully finish before Christmas. Any additional questions?
No. Thanks, Mike.
Welcome, sir.
Okay, anybody else got make work that we can take time to?
I would suggest you move on to item number two.
Item number two is a presentation on Flagler County Draft Manatee Protection Plan Update. If you have somebody that wanted to speak to this, or
Council may recall that this was requested by Mayor Nitz, who
fined
a number of years ago. There was a little group put together, had representatives from a variety of interested parties, including City of Palm Coast. Mayor Nitz represented us from City Council. And Denise Bevan represented us from staff standpoint. They came up with a plan, and and you're going to hear today how that all kind of evolved. But it
I was at that meeting with the mayor and with Denise, with Mr. Coffey and his staff.
Yeah, so, but it didn't, from there they had to go on and get it approved by the state, probably the federal government, both. They're at that stage. So the mayor asked that the county, which is taking the lead on this, because obviously it's a county-wide type project, come and give City Council an update as to the status and where we are. And this is an item that City Council will not have to take action on. You can always have public provide public input in the process, but this is a county plan that has to be approved by the regulatory agencies that you'll hear.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Denise, but what we're going to talk about isn't really in the City of Palm Coast, is it?
Yes. Okay. Well, it's intercoastal, so one side of it is, and half, you know, one bank is, and the other bank isn't, so it's, it impacts Palm Coast a great deal because of our boaters and that type of thing. So, with that, I'm going to turn it over to Denise, and she'll introduce our guests from Flagler County, and we'll go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Landon. So, I'd like to introduce Tim Telfer. He's a public lands and natural resources manager for the county, and he's been point for the production of this plan. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, good morning, council members.
Good morning.
We're going to work through a little bit of background here this morning to help you out. We do have an item for you to consider in the future, though, and that is whether you want to operate under this Manatee Protection Plan or essentially go out on your own and draft something unique. at this point in time, what's at play here is really multi-slip facilities. So if you have an applicant come in with a construction project that involves five or more docks, boat slips, that would not be authorized today under the state and federal permitting systems. They would be rejected. We've had a number of applicants rejected already. This Manatee Protection Plan should be the final step to clear up that issue. We've got a little bit of background here. I'm not going to go into too much detail on this stuff, but one of the first questions that we get from folks is, why are we still wrestling with this issue here? It's kind of been in one form or another since roughly 2006. And in essence, we've press the state and federal agencies to kind of, help us understand better how this is a crisis. Nobody wants to see a manatee struck by a watercraft. Nobody wants to see them die. At the same time, we're trying to balance the regulations that have been, we've been asked to impose upon the citizens of Flagler County. So we took a look at the deaths per year, and the overall deaths were a little bit, certainly not at the same level as Brevard or Volusia or Duval. We're kind of in the same boat as St. John's, who doesn't have a manatee protection plan. So those are some of the first questions that we worked through. The response was, well, we saw a tremendous amount of growth for Flagler County in the mid part of the last decade. When we kind of presented the numbers back to them, what that growth actually was, it was a percentage increase, not raw numbers of citizens, not raw numbers of boats in the waters. Unfortunately, that didn't satisfy their concerns. Mr. Landon referenced an action back in 2010. We had the local rural review committee that Mayor Nitz was a part of.
Probably need to formally announce that Mayor Nitz is
sorry for my tardiness.
Mayor, we just Tim Telfer, Flagler County, just got started on the Manatee Protection Plan.
It's one of your favorite subjects.
Yes, indeed. Good morning, Mayor. We're just going through a little bit of backgrounds, and I did, you know, threw the question out to the council that we will be asking whether the city wants to operate under the Manatee Protection Plan or craft something unique as we move forward here. We're still moving through the background. We're up to about 2010 chronologically. This is the year that we were notified by the Fish and Wildlife Commission. That's a state agency that they were recommending speed zones of Flagler County waterways. We were required by statute to put together what's called a local rule review committee. The mayor did serve on that committee there. And we did have some speed zones that were installed in Flagler County waters. I'll show you a map in a little bit here. We also made a commitment at the end of that process to also draft a manatee protection plan. And the most recent draft of that plan was submitted to the Fish and Wildlife Commission, the state agency, in early August of this year. These are the speed zones that we currently have in Flagler County waterways. We're at about five and a quarter miles now out of roughly 18 miles total. And that's kind of, I want to get this out there. This has been an inaccurate number that's been picked up over time. These are the true numbers that are in place and enforced at this time. Speed zones were adopted in 2012, signed in 2013, so we saw real enforcement around 2013. But we haven't had any manatee mortalities since they've been in place. This is one of the things that we went back to the state agencies on and tried to communicate regarding the draft manatee protection plan that we're discussing this morning. The first version that we sent them back in January of this year had a pretty minor, I'll call it minor, boating facility sighting element. And the boating facility sighting element deals with how many slips you're going to allow to be installed in the Flagler County waterways from the point this plan is adopted moving forward. We wanted a light boating facility sighting plan element. Because we hadn't had any manatee mortalities, we wanted to have a wait-and-see approach. Maybe this solves the problem and resolve their concerns. They told us no. So we went back and included a more robust boating facility sighting plan element and submitted that back in August. I apologize. We had to work with the layer that they gave us. As part of our commitment... Oh, I've got a laser pointer. As part of our commitment... We also had an additional half mile of zone that had been requested. So this is the Lehigh Canal right here, State Road 100 below it. We had to work with the colors that we had on this graphing map here. This is what the additional half mile of zone is going to look like here on their map, and I've got a little bit better one on the next page here. And the colors may not show up in the darkened room here, but we've got the latitude and longitude. This is the kind of the third element of solving the Manatee Protection Plan issues in Flagler County is this additional half-mile zone. I think I may not have this PowerPoint totally up to speed. When we last went before our board about 2 weeks ago, our board did approve sending a letter to the Fish and Wildlife Commission. So we have now formally requested this additional half-mile zone. The way the Manatee Protection Plan operates is we have... essentially three categories that govern the construction of multi-slip facilities. So this is five or more slips. If you're a single-family homeowner today, you can go out and receive a permit and construct the dock in front of your home. But if you are constructing a condominium, for example, and you're going to have five, six, or more slips out in front of that condominium, you would not receive authorization for the permit issuance until we get this Manatee Protection Plan adopted. We've got three levels here. One is preferred. This is no restrictions at all. That's in the green on this overall map, and I'll zoom into Palm Coast in a little bit here. What you're going to find in a lot of Palm Coast is acceptable with conditions. This is five slips for every 100 feet of shorelines. The way we came up with this ratio is we took a look at the data sets that were provided to us. This was manatee mortalities. This was we did analyze the Flagler County waterway for any submerged aquatic vegetation or food sources, proximity to inlets. Essentially, boating density was also part of the equation, and that's really what triggered the uptick in regulation here to 5 to 100. Now, we also have a third category called special development area. We do have one within the City of Palm Coast regulatory area. The special development area is an area that we're designating to be outside of those ratios. This is areas that we knew had projects that we knew had been in the application stages, and they were applying for more than five boat slips for their site. or that we could reasonably infer would be applying in the near future. We have a couple of parcels here that don't have any formal applications in. We have one parcel on the east side of the ICW, north of the Hammock Beach Yacht Club, that is roughly 20 acres. And it's logical to conclude that if somebody's going to purchase a 20-acre parcel on the Intracoastal Waterway, there's a good chance they're going to do a multi-slip facility there. So we included that as a special development area also for the future. You guys know what the city of Palm Coast looks like. Okay, so again, the green is no restrictions. I believe the city of Palm Coast picks up somewhere around here. A lot of the city falls within that 5-to-100 ratio. We do have one special development area here. This is the Villages at Palm Coast. We communicated a little bit with city staff. I hope this information is accurate that we have up on the PowerPoint here. This is what we've included in the Manatee Protection Plan. This is what we understand the project to the project status to be at this time. And you guys also stretch down into this is Fox's Cut over here on the east side here. You guys stretch down a little bit farther to the south. Waterfront Park is right here. If there's any questions about Waterfront Park today, you're in a preferred status. So if you decided you want to go out and construct a boat ramp with multi-boat trailer parking slips, and I should throw out, a boat trailer parking space does count as a slip. So if you had more than five, you would need this plan in some form in place. If you wanted to go out and do that today, we currently have you in a preferred category. Briefly, where do we go from here? We did submit the current draft of the Manatee Protection Plan last month. One issue that we're still wrestling with, the way that additional half mile of speed zone is installed is we make a request to the Fish and Wildlife Commission. When we've done some informal inquiry about how that process would transpire, they steered us back to the local rule review committee process. It's our position at the county that we've been through the local rule review committee process once. They've examined all the data that's available within the Intracoastal Waterway. There's been no new data mined or presented since the speed zones have been considered. The original LRRC recommended against that additional half mile of zone. We're back to the drawing board and requesting it anyway at the insistence of the state and federal agencies. So it's been our position that the LRC process is not necessary. There's really nothing to be gained. We've had a number of public meetings where the public has been welcome to provide their input on that additional half mile of zone. But we're not done with that conversation. We don't know where it will go. As I mentioned at the start, we are going to need you to make a determination on whether, and you don't have to do it today, but whether you will want to operate under this Manatee Protection Plan or consider something on your own. If you do want to operate under this Manatee Protection Plan, we're happy to work with you. Essentially, what it would consist of is you would continue to maintain your own discrete review of the projects within the city of Palm Coast. You would notify us of the location and the number of slips proposed. The county would then draft a letter to the state saying the project is or is not in compliance with the current Manatee Protection Plan standards. And that's really all I have.
So, Tuffel, can you describe why the advisory committee recommended against that additional zone and go through that? I think that would be helpful for city council to understand.
Here's the additional half mile of zone here. The data sets that the local rule review committee were working with were essentially two aerial flyover projects conducted by the Fish and Wildlife Commission. On the first set, I believe they contracted with Moat Marine, and they conducted roughly 40 flyovers of the Intracoastal Waterway over a two-year period. And as they were flying over, they would essentially log a GPS location for any manatee sightings. The other data set that they were working with was a very similar contracted process where they conducted a number of flyovers. This time they were looking at boats in the water, the size and the speed of the vessel, whether they were on plane or stationary, and estimating the size. They then layered that data, one on top of the other, and also kind of threw in some data on mortalities and came up with some areas that they considered hotspots. These are areas where they believe that the manatees were under the greatest threat from continued impacts with watercraft. The local road review committee reviewed the same data and found it, I'm going to call it incomplete, and disagreed with the state recommendation at a number of stations, not only here, but throughout a number of their proposed speed zones. We originally started with, I believe it was almost 7 miles total that was recommended based on their data sets. The committee came back with a much lower number, and we finally settled with additional mileage at about 2.3 to get us to the 5.25 that we showed you earlier.
Just to amplify that a little bit, Tim is absolutely correct. Two separate flyovers, one locating manatees, the other locating boats, and then superimposing the data. They call it coincidence data, meaning coincident at the same place at the same time. They were not at the same time at all. The argument the local rule review committee made was manatees are migratory. You photograph them, they're here today, tomorrow they're here and here and here. We found the data was not convincing. Also, the original premise was that there were these manatee mortalities resulting from collisions with boats or boats with manatees. The reality is during this discussion period, there were zero manatee deaths attributable to boats. The committee, although it was a well-divided committee, it was an equal number, in theory, an equal number of boaters and an equal number of environmental activists. But there was, I'll say consensus because there was a vote, that the data did not show that there was a significant threat to manatees. There were alternatives that the local rule review committee proposed, and in fact, there's a piece of it in this diagram. We suggested 25 mile an hour speed limit in the center of the waterway, slow speed on either side. In other words, basically cutting the high speed area in half. In other words, prior to any kind of regulation, you had the whole width of the intracoastal waterway in which to boat at whatever speed you chose. We suggested 25 mile an hour in the center, slow speed on the perimeter. And that's been done in one area, south of Flagler Beach Bridge. We suggested that for the whole area. So there was discussion. What we arrived at was a compromise. Essentially, that's where the local rule review committee stood.
Yeah. The other issue at play here is we're a little bit unique when you compare Flagler County to the other counties that have already adopted manatee protection plans. We lack a lot of the low-hanging fruit in crafting these plans. As I mentioned, we don't have submerged aquatic vegetation. We don't have warm water discharges. We don't really have freshwater discharges that were considerable enough to be considered an attractant. And we don't have an inlet. Those are the low-hanging fruit that you normally identify when you're drafting a manatee protection plan, where you're going to put the future marinas and where you're going to try to give the manatees some refuge. So we were a little bit data deficient when we went through that process in 2010.
Is there a way for a future development to attain preferred status, or is the map the map?
Well, first let me point out that the map is draft. We have not gotten the comments back from the agency, so some of this may change slightly. We'll notify your staff if we get any requests for changes. Once it's adopted, the map is the map. However, you as an applicant have the option to request to operate outside the map and present your own data and make your own arguments to the state and federal agencies. I can't give you any odds on success there, but you can try to go it alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and once again, this was presentation only. No action by city council required. In my opinion, having two manatee protection plans on the same waterway makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. It would be very confusing, and this is one of those where the water and the critters in the water don't recognize political boundaries. So for us to in any way say, okay, in Palm Coast you're going to do something different than the rest of at least the county, it makes no sense to me. But that would be your choice.
Tim, could you go back and readdress what the circumstance would be if Palm Coast chose not to participate in this and we were going to do our own manatee protection plan. What I think I heard you say is we might have all of Palm Coast as preferred, and then if that did not correspond with the county's plan, we would have to go to the county and seek approval? Or?
So what we're talking about is if the city decides to go on their own.
If the city were deciding to go on its own, and if the city were to say that everything within the city boundaries is preferred.
Well, the first event that would happen is you would remain in the status that we're all in right now, and this is this non-compliant status. So essentially no multi-slip permits would be issued. You would present your manatee protection plan, and there's a number of ways to go about drafting these recommendations. Now, we focused on what Duval County did recently. It was, I believe they got theirs approved about 4 years ago, and they went with a ratio system, and we felt that there was some good momentum created by that plan. There are other approaches around the state. People essentially create a slip pool, and people can kind of buy into a slip pool and essentially purchase a number of slips from a discrete geographic area. All those hypotheticals aside, you basically got to take the same background information and come up with your own approach and then work through this extensive negotiation process with the state and federal entities for approval. I can't give you odds on success there. It's
sure you can. Slim to none.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'll go under. I'll take the under on that bet.
Yeah. Where did the body counts, if you will, come from? Who counts dead manatees, and where do those numbers come from? And how do you know? How do you know that if I find a deceased manatee floating down in the Lehigh Canal, that it was killed here in Flagler County?
Well, your last comment was one of the most difficult issues for everyone to wrestle with, and the answer is you don't know where that death occurred. Some of these carcasses, when they're recovered, have been decomposing for quite a period of time.
And they could have died of old age.
Well, if they've got something...
When they do what's called a necropsy,
yeah.
They look for slashes on the dorsal side. That would be a boat propeller. You can pretty well tell if there's injuries consistent with a boat. What you can't tell is whether the boat hit them in St. John's County or Flagler County.
So any time a manatee is struck by a boat propeller, it's going to die?
No.
There's many of them out there with multiple scars on them.
But if it's deceased by the blade, then the wound will be different than if it healed.
Yes. The other factor is that when you look at the manatee deaths in Flagler County, the vast majority, what they call perinatal deaths, they are cold water deaths. The cow gives birth, and back in the Palm Coast canals, there's a lot of birthing going on. The little ones, the calves, are not. It's not warm enough to sustain them, and it's called a perinatal death. And tongue-in-cheek, I said, well, maybe we should put bottle warmers in the canals. But the reality is that if there is cause and effect, it would suggest that the existing manatee protection plan has reduced boat-induced manatee deaths to zero. Now, that could be a fluke. Statistics. There's three kinds of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics. And you could have a huge spike in boat-related manatee deaths next year. From my point of view, I don't see any advantage of Palm Coast going its own. I was the chairman of the local rule review committee. I attended any number of fish and wildlife meetings. I was for 2 years the FIND representative on the voting advisory council for fish and wildlife. It's a stacked deck. The likelihood of us getting any better treatment or any better outcome than what Flagler County has negotiated is nil.
Ms. Owen, our long-range planning staff has looked at the areas that are designated for special development and so we concur with the
heads are nodding.
Okay. Yes.
Anything else?
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mayor, we have gone through all of them except for item number 3.
My goodness.
Yes.
Maybe I'm the cause of delay.
Well, you know.
So the only left is agenda item number 3?
Yes.
Why don't we go to agenda item number 3?
Thank you.
That's what I would have done.
Makes good sense.
Yeah, our land development code obviously has a landscaping provision that we're all very much aware of, and it has made Palm Coast the appearance of what it is today. But we all, including internal staff, would agree that there are some provisions of that land development code, the landscape section of it, that are difficult to administer, difficult to actually interpret, and needs to be updated and improved. I think everybody's in agreement with that across the board. Now, exactly what that update is and what those improvements are to the code, that's where discussion will happen. But as you're going to find out, we've actually reached out to the development community and asked for their help and input, like we've done many other times when we work on land development code updates, and have a very good working relationship with representatives of the development community. You're going to get input from the residents and probably some businesses too. So we're going to go through a process, a public process, to try to come up with something that is a good balance. And I'm not sure Bo's taking the lead. Okay, so we're going to turn it over to Bo and get into details. You're going to find that we're not looking for final answers now. This is an update. This is not time for City Council to take action, but we wanted, before it starts getting a lot of public discussion, you to get it, have an update. So this is strictly an update. You won't see this as an action item for some time now.
Right. Good morning, Mayor and Council. Bo Falgu. This is the kickoff of the process, of course. As with the first land development code that was updated, it's a process to go through and update the code. With me, you have Ray Tyner, planning manager, and then Charlie Faulkner with the Flagler County Association for Responsible Development. I'll let Charlie introduce himself and his group in just a second. Just a little background. The first land development code, really the city's first land development code, was adopted in 2008. We were trying to remember all the number of public workshops with Ray, but it was over 50 public workshops during the drafting, long and arduous, going through many details in the code. And of course, we had good partnerships with organizations like FCAR through that process. The economic development team, Ray is a part of that as well. As part of some of our goals and objectives this year, as part of the strategic action plan, is of course to review the land development code in coordination with planning staff, and really taking a focused approach. Some of the issues, both internally by staff and in our business community, especially commercial retailers that like visibility, has identified some issues with the landscape code. So that's one of the first areas we're going to tackle, but that's not just all. Industrial standards is another one we want to take a look at and make sure that our industrial areas, that when you go out to Hargrove Grade, that's going to be the continuation to make it welcoming and industrial, and then, of course, other chapters. And, of course, we want to get feedback from those using the code. So organizations like FCARD, our businesses, real estate, put people in the growth community. And I guess to stop here, Charlie, if you want to talk a little bit about who FCARD is and what they do, not just here in Flagler, but in Volusia as well.
All right, well, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. I think I'm going to try to be as brief as I can. I think in my letter that I wrote, I gave a little bit of background as to this organization. It's essentially a group of land use professionals that came together almost 30 years ago in Volusia County. 30 years ago in Volusia County, you had the county and roughly 26 cities. And I am told by some of the old guys that everybody hated everybody. And it was extremely a hostile environment, very difficult to get along with. And a group of the landowners and the professionals came together and essentially said, wow, wouldn't it be great if we could, like, educate these people, educate staff as well as the elected officials so that they better understood the issues that come in front of them and therefore be able to make more efficient and balanced decisions. So the organization itself is an organization that tries its best to bring about change through education and understanding and communication. The Flagler County chapter is sort of an umbrella underneath VCARD because Volusia County, there's so much more going on in Volusia County. But a lot of those same professionals do a lot of work here in Flagler County. We deal with, I hesitate to estimate how many cities that we interface with, and probably five or six counties, and frequently get presented proposed land development codes, and they ask for our feedback. And one of the reasons we try to be very balanced, we try to not necessarily take positions. We as a group have the opportunity to work in multiple jurisdictions, not just one jurisdiction. So we have the ability to see what seems to work well and what doesn't work out so well. We try to bring that to the table and work with staff. We try to make the elected officials' lives a lot easier, actually, because we try to flush out as much of the controversy on an issue as we can, work it out with staff ahead of time before it actually goes to hearing. And that's what we will try to do here.
And some of the goals for the upcoming landscape code changes, and once again, this is just the start of the process, but really some of the concerns both internally and we hear is planning for the future versus just today. And I think since the code was adopted in 08, we've seen both the initial planting of the landscape and then 7 years down the road, what it looks like, and trying to find that balance. Also, some issues, both from the business community and internally, is maintaining for the future. So some of the tree trimming that's been done hasn't been the best. And so, you know, starting to talk about how we better regulate how those trees are maintained and the educational component of that landscaping. And, of course, you know, something that's special about Palm Coast is our Green City and Tree City USA. Through these changes, we want to maintain that high level of the beauty in our community. Of course, simplifying standards, and then finally increasing competitiveness with similar communities. And just as an example, Bill Hoover, one of the planners here, went through and looked at our existing code versus other codes. And I'll try to explain the diagram. It's a little fuzzy, but essentially taking our code and applying it to a commercial piece of property in comparison to other communities. So a 200 by 275 lot, 55,000 square feet, applying all the buffers and the landscapes and the setbacks, you would end up with a building of 7,600 square feet. And this is important because, especially from the commercial aspect, the size of that building is how a developer makes the sale to the final commercial entity that wants to maybe come to Palm Coast. Mr. Hoover looked at other communities such as New Smyrna Beach, Ormond Beach, St. John's County, Sarasota. Those higher-end communities that have, you know, similar tree city designations or heightened landscape requirements, and basing on their standards and what kind of building square footage you would get, you know, and it was averaging about 10,000 square feet. So just kind of that's where, when we go through these changes, is something we're going to look at to make sure that we're competitive with those communities and that not only from the building side, but also that our landscape standards continue to make Palm Coast look like a beautiful place. So,
interject.
Sure.
This is the first time that this has actually been quantified in this manner. But for 10 years, this is the single biggest complaint that I hear from national builders, national retail folks. We can't put a normal template, our normal template building footprint on a normal size lot in the city of Palm Coast because the code, it's impossible. This illustrates what those guys were talking about.
So it is something we'll look at throughout this process.
If you were to go back to that slide, please. I'm not sure I want to look like Ormond Beach, but if we were to modify our code to make it similar to Ormond Beach, what would be the differences? What would be eliminated or what would be permitted or what would the changes be? Setbacks? Buffers? What?
Sure. Some of the, and I'm talking, maybe Bill will probably be better to come up and
some of them are setbacks. Some of them are loading zones. Like in other sections of our code, we require a loading zone for most retail, even for smaller, and that's a lot of concrete where you have a separate parking spot in the back that you take a car or a truck or whatever and have a loading zone. And that's a requirement for almost all of our commercial, even a small little champ or a small
the
commercial.
Alternative would be carrying the stuff in the front door.
Exactly. I mean, if you go to, like, the little champ, you know, or Shell gas station, they're typically, you know, they have that room to unload where those tanker trucks are going. Why make them create another area of impervious area to have another loading zone? So those are the type of things that we will be looking at as
so
well.
So this isn't just landscaping requirements. This is site plan requirements.
That was the question I was getting at. What are the kinds of changes you anticipate?
Most areas, it's the rear loading zone, which also reduces the amount of actually landscaping you can put in front of the building because it pushes the building forward.
I would like to point out that, you know, the city staff put this together. We're seeing this too. Yeah. So this is not just the development community saying, whoa, you got a problem. This is city staff saying, whoa, we don't necessarily agree with these requirements that we have to enforce. So there is common agreement that this is very worthwhile taking a look at.
And Mayor, that's one other, just another example. When Island Walk was preliminary, whenever coming here, we were working on a master plan development agreement or site plan. One of the discussions was where the Blockbuster Video is to increase that, to have a feature, have a pond feature with nice landscape around it. But our code right now only allows 25% of a stormwater feature to be within our landscape buffer. So, I mean, it's very common. I mean, water is a great focal point. It could be very beautiful. So those type of things we want to be able to look at, too.
Yeah. What are the lines? I can't read it. Does it say L? Are they foundation planting areas? Is that what do you see the line? There's several lines pointing out the cutouts along foundation planting areas. Right, so you eat up a lot of space with foundation planting areas, which are difficult to maintain and upkeep.
Yeah. This wasn't meant to be a final. This is just kind of something we've heard from the business community and something, you know, Bill took a look at just to say, okay, where do we really stand when you apply? Because it's stories are great, but how does it really compare to some of those other communities? Just as a look.
I'd like to know how it compares with Flagler County's codes.
Flagler County is totally different when it comes to development. You don't want to. You need to take communities that are more like Palm Coast to compare it to
the reason I asked Mr. Lannon is because I'm hearing the implication that businesses that may have come to Palm Coast have been discouraged from doing so because of our codes.
But those businesses, very unlikely, are going to go to Flagler County because of their code, because of traffic patterns and things. There's other factors. So What we're competing with is not unincorporated Flagler County for the most part. We're competing with another one you put up there is Port Orange. Yeah, those are the areas, because Flagler County just doesn't have the State Road 100. They don't have the Palm Coast Parkway and the, you know, those type of
right.
areas.
So yeah, other municipalities with similar density and demographics, is there?
And street networks and those type of things is really a good comparison. If you compare a rural Flagler County, you know, County Road 11, 13, yeah, it's just not a good comparison.
You know, I thought this was the problem. I didn't think it was that drastic. That is really surprising, 25% smaller use of land. I had no idea that it was that bad, that drastic.
Well, and when we go, you know, as we get fewer and fewer lots available along our major corridors, will become, you know, it's the infill opportunities on those lots as well. So once again, it's not, it's just as an example of a need, something to evaluate. I think Palm Coast, even with those communities, is unique compared to those communities, but I think it's just kind of a measuring stick to kind of see where we're at and what are the real, you know, a 7,600 square foot building, it's going to have a delivery or two a week. Smaller trucks is not a department store, so having a rear zone really, you know, and no one's going to want to park back there. I mean, customers aren't going to park back there.
What does this do with existing businesses that are here now? If they wanted to change something, or if you're talking about like the frontage of the building, would they be able to change anything on existing commercial space?
Well, if the code, when we come up with a new code and they want to make changes, they can be consistent with that code. They can go and make a change.
We cannot require them to make any changes, but if they want to make changes that are consistent with the new code, they would be allowed.
Bo, how do our newly hired economic development consultants feel about this?
Right, and I've talked to him about this as far as you know, land regulation changes and things like that. The number one decision for them is going to be market and customers, not a question. You know, when it becomes more of a, when their computer comes back and it's close, whether they should open a new store, then they start to get details like this. If it's a home run hit, they're going to comply with whatever the code is, because the market's there, they're going to sell enough widgets to make sense. But
so the answer to my question is, I'd like to see the code expanded.
Well, it's like Mr. Faulkner said. I mean, if they drop a template and they can't build what they want to build on the land they want, you know, they physically can't come, won't come here.
Well,
they'll say we'll go to,
that's true, but
you know, somewhere else.
What really happens though is if that's the only space they have, in other words, it's blocked in, that's a lot, then they can't. Or they're required to buy more land,
right?
And cost of land, commercial land, is sold by the square foot, so therefore they actually increase their cost. When they start increasing their cost, they start looking at their computer and going, I'm not so sure that I've got a return on that investment like I would somewhere else. So then that's where we become not as competitive. So
just
both of those are
bumped down the list.
Yeah, yes. And I, another example, it's really interesting that, you know, visibility, we hear a lot of complaints, oh, you can't see the sign, you got too much landscape in front of the building, you can't see the building. You know, our land development code in 2008, a lot of the times, the landscape architect or whoever that professional is who's doing that site plan puts it there. And our landscape architect is only looking at, you know, do you have the required number of trees, not actually looking and saying, you know, don't put it in front of the sign. Because what happens, you know, since 2008 to now, the vegetation is growing, it's starting to hide the sign, and now, you know, wow, it's the city's landscape code. No, it really isn't. So clarifying some of those things in our code to make it
more
friendly.
That's a little bit, I mean, I've heard a lot of stories. I've been hearing about this for years. And being a business owner, you know, it was one of my complaints also. I mean, I have heard nightmare stories. Now, I don't know if they're true or not. You know what I mean? It's just hearsay. That's, you know. But reading Mr. Faulkner's letter that he sent us, the list on the second page, I mean, is dead into 90% of the complaints I get. I mean, they're all listed here. And I want to maintain that these things do need to be fixed while maintaining our overall, you know, infrastructure and structure of a beautiful place. You know, making it fair to both sides, to the residents, to the businesses, you know, that kind of stuff. But this list, this bullet point list is so dead on, it was scary when I read it. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe these things that he's saying are exactly what most, not just developers and building owners, you know, and the owners also. These are the things, you know, because they have to maintain it afterwards. Mm-hmm. And this is I mean, dead on.
And just kind of to, you know, wrap up, there may be more discussion, but you know, once again, this kind of kick off the process. Just wanted to let you know kind of what the concerns were, what kind of the steps we're taking forward. And similar to the last time we drafted land development code, see, you know, planning staff's going to work with input from the economic development team and from FCARD, who has not just developers and builders, but they have realtors, maintenance companies as well, because that's part of the area that we're going to address too. And then, of course, it'll start kick off the public hearing process with Planning and Land Development Board. They'll have some, I'm sure, workshops and public hearings, and hopefully to try to flesh out those details so we're not getting into inches and feet of plant material. But you may have a few unresolved issues that come forward back to you that planning staff and the FCARD disagree, but just like last time, I'm sure the majority of the issues can be worked out, and of course, I'll be back with you for City Council public hearings, and then if any changes are made, we'll of course make changes to the technical manual from there. So just kind of wanted to lay out the process, let you know, and once again, this is kind of the first. Landscape code is one of the first we're tackling. There'll be other changes as well, and kind of following the same process we did with the home builders with the color changes that we made quite a while back, and we haven't heard very many complaints about colors.
We did the same process with the signage, got the chamber a little more involved, the mm-hmm. local and businesses. So this is process has worked well for us. Including making sure that City Council thinks this would be a good idea, and I'm not seeing anybody say that no, we shouldn't be proceeding. So, and because if you think we're just wasting our time, then we shouldn't be doing that. But I think everybody on our from staff and developers would like to see this proceed.
Yeah, and when we said in 2008 when we got the Land Development Code adopted the first time, we've always said that this isn't a code that stays stagnant. It's something that you have to continue to look at to improve on. And since 2006, and especially in the last couple, 2-3 years, I mean, we haven't had any plats up until recently. So some of these process, we're getting the first time to practice with our new code and seeing how it's being applied and seeing how it's working. So now is the time to kind of go back and make it better while keeping our quality.
Question. I'm looking at Mr. Faulkner's list. You need more reasonable plans. You need more reasonable plans. If we went through this huge public process in 2008, how did we get all of these unreasonable requirements?
Just not reasonable.
But if you had all this input, I recall 2008 very clearly, and I remember these meetings and these workshops, and there was input from all variety of folks.
And the landscape code was, section of the code was definitely one of the hottest topics, too. So, Mayor, I'm going to respond that, you know, you write codes, and you think you know where you're headed, and then when you go out and actually implement them, and that's mm-hmm. part of the learning process.
And that's what we're going to look at, where we are, right. And look at where people want us to be, and then find, you know, because we're going to get unreasonable requests the other way.
Well, yeah, but, you know, there's some people who are, you know, this isn't going to be a simple, oh, yeah, everybody agrees. Some people will tell you that it's not unreasonable what we require. They like
one of the things that stands out that I can fully agree with is landscaping needs to contemplate the future. If you plant a tree that's 3 foot tall today, it's going to be 10 foot tall and 20 foot tall, and that needs to be part of our thought process.
If you plant that 2 inches from your house, you got a problem.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that clearly is an area that needs to be addressed, because we're seeing the complications that arise from that as the foliage matures. So, I mean, there are parts of this that I'm in complete agreement with, parts I'm going to need to be convinced.
Mayor, my recollection, because I worked on many, many of those workshops, is that before it came to City Council, Planning Board had made the final recommendation. And landscaping was towards the end of that process, not towards the beginning. And you can imagine, I mean, we were meeting weekly. I remember, I thought it was 29, and then there was probably public hearings and on top of that. I mean, it was a very long process, very tiring process, and I think at the end, the makeup of the planning board at the time was, you know, they were less, or they were more reluctant to make accept some of the recommendations. How about that?
Well stated.
Next steps.
We're, of course, we just kind of got started with drafting changes. I think, you know, the group has been working for a couple sessions now, but then they'll be scheduling for planning board workshops, and then finally, of course, the normal process will be coming back for City Council public hearings and workshops. So it's kind of the process probably going to be, Ray?
We're working on the landscape chapter now. I got the feedback and going through that section. We're hoping we have a good draft by the next couple of months, and we start bringing the planning board to kind of go through, and with FCARD. We're looking at our architectural section of our land development code as well, clearing some items up with that, and then, you know, our land use table and the rest of the chapters. Denise will be looking at our environmental section as well. She is looking at tweaking that section as well, and would like to take that to FCARD and have some of their environmental professionals who are working in the field look at it. But landscape first, and then our architectural will soon follow. And we'll be trying to get some workshops with the planning board as soon as we can.
Any other questions, comments? This is a workshop. There is no public comment at the workshop. However, anything that was discussed today is certainly fair game for public comment at our next scheduled meeting. Discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda.
I have nothing.
Mr. Mobile.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. McGuire.
Are we in the process of putting together a meeting between the City Council and the Board of County Commissioners?
I have sent a letter to Mr. Meeker, Chairman of the County Commission, saying we're more than happy to meet, reiterating our request for agenda items, and transmitting to them the one issue that we felt was most important from our point of view. I'm waiting to hear back from Mr. Meeker. What I did ask is that after the Commission submits its ideas for what they'd like to discuss, that the two staffs mutually produce an agenda that we can then follow to be sure that we're not just meeting for the sake of meeting.
Okay, so the next step will be a response from the Board of County Commissioners
saying, here are the items that we want to discuss.
And yes, but they've already said they want to meet with us.
Yes. Well, yes.
Okay.
So I written back and said, give us your topics that we want to discuss. Here's the one topic that is of interest to City Council.
Okay.
Then let's suppose they have three items and we have one or two. Put together an agenda, the two staffs working together, and then we will meet and follow that agenda.
Okay, the only other thing I have is that for those that are interested, tomorrow at 10 a.m. will be a meeting of the Tourist Development Council at the Government Services Agency. That's it.
The meeting's open to the public?
It is open to the public, and the public is allowed to speak.
Ms. Shipley?
I just wanted to say at the next meeting, so next Tuesday, if we could just get an update on the TNR, because I've been getting some emails on that, and the Matanzas Golf Course, if anything is happening different with that. And okay. I kind of was disappointed. I thought Beltier Swim and Racquetball would be on the agenda, but because it's so time-sensitive, so I was wondering if we could...
I can give you... It was on my list to give you a little update on that.
Okay.
One.
All right.
If I could do that. And Mayor, after
discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Landon.
Okay. I met with the superintendent last week after Tuesday's city council meeting. I think one of the misperceptions is the school district is planning on either mothballing or getting rid of ownership of the Beltair Swim and Racquet Club, and that is not actually part of their plans right now. They aren't planning on abandoning it. They have other plans, potential variety of options. So
so they're not going to put it up for sale?
No. Okay. They're not going to put it up for sale. So,
but they are looking for potentially someone to lease it.
Yes, to lease
the facility and do with it.
Right.
their will.
So a couple of things. The idea of Palm Coast City Council and the Flagler County Board of Commissioners getting together to talk about somebody else's facility, and they are going to keep it. The most relevant party wouldn't be in the room. I mean, that just wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. Also, they are going through a process right now to see what are their options. So concept is, at least in my opinion, is let them go through and see what kind of proposals they receive and what kind of action they take. But this is not something that, the county commissioners and city council can sit and discuss. Now, you always have the option of writing a check, but...
Writing who a check?
The school district.
For what?
To support their pool.
To continue it.
To subsidize it. But on the other hand, if you're going to write a check to subsidize a program, we've got a pool ourselves. That, to me, makes no sense to, because, and one of our problems is, in my opinion, is if we have two pools close together, then neither one of them are operating at full capacity. So,
did Mr. Oliva provide any financial data? I asked Chris Quinn if we could quantify what it takes to run our pool. If this pool is financially an albatross around the school district's neck, then are they going to be able to show some P&L type statements that says, this is what we're spending, here's how it's staffed, here's where the money's going?
Mr. McGuire, we've asked for that, and they're going to send us that, and I'll get that out to City Council.
In that same vein, as I understand the programs at Beltair Swim Racket, you have a pool, you have an exercise room, you have tennis and racquetball courts.
Tennis courts, I know. I don't know about racquetball.
Yeah, tennis.
Tennis courts, okay. If Beltair Swim Racket did not exist and I wanted those same amenities, I would have to pay to go to Frida Zamba, and I would have to pay to go to any one of the other fitness facilities that are in town, and I could pay to join the tennis facility, or I could use the free to the public facilities.
Right.
But I'm curious, what would my aggregate cost be to take that option, to go to these other facilities? I'm wondering if the members of the club are paying a reasonable and fair membership rate.
Well, I think most of them are covered under the Silver Sneakers program.
Only if you have Humana.
Right.
Medicare.
But a lot of them do. Yeah. You know, every one of them I spoke to, that's how
they got the Silver
Sneakers. They were covered.
You can go down to Fitness One and use
right,
it again
or
over nothing.
Well, that's what I said. I don't know if they know how much Silver Sneakers is contributing for their membership. It's obviously a lesser
substantial
so you know that's gonna play into that factor. But this group of people that are there now could essentially respond to the school board's RFP for a lease, mm-hmm. and then take it over and run it
sure.
and continue it as it is. I think the issue is what they came to us with was the school board shutting it down, I think, the 21st.
That was the rumor.
There was a date out there right nearby. And
shutting down to the public, not necessarily.
Right, shutting down to the public, yeah. My only concern in all of this is I just don't want that to become a jungle. You know, a shutdown.
That's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah,
so
I don't
really
want to, you know, because you're talking a big pool, a big building. Right. That's going to be a mess in the middle of that community.
And that's not what they're contemplating now at all. So,
provided somebody leases it.
Mr. Lynn, what's the zoning on it? Is that public semi?
I haven't looked at it, but, I mean, obviously, that all can be changed to accommodate any kind of recreation.
I mean, having a facility that large, mothballed in the middle of a community, I think that's
it's disastrous.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
And just so we all know, we're having enough problems with Matanzas that's
right.
privately owned. Mm. Our building codes, our land development codes, our code enforcement codes are not applicable to the Board
right.
of Education. They are exempt from our regulations. So what you're envisioning is a very real possibility. The thing that I communicated to the residents, I'm disappointed that this conversation didn't start a year ago.
Right.
To give everyone a better chance to look at alternatives and options.
Well, I'm disappointed in that, and I'm also disappointed in the fact that this group of citizens didn't have any idea of what they wanted to do. Nobody came up and said, here's a plan of what it would take financially to keep it going. And I also resent the idea that if you don't bankroll this, you hate seniors. You know, because again and again and again, we have people approaching the city council with a cause, and if you don't support this, then you're this.
Well, I think the people that said that came forward and said that, you know, we demand you do it. I think the next speaker pretty much said, well, we don't really feel that way. You know, I think they kind of made up for it that way.
What I heard at that meeting, to your point, everybody was impassioned. Everybody was very passionate about this issue, but there were so many conflicting statements. Oh, it's falling apart. It's being held together with duct tape. Next speaker says this is the most marvelous facility. It's the best. You never should have allowed Fitness One because it took away our membership. Fitness One is horrible and it's not effective. Everybody was passionate, but there was no consistent story other than do something. So,
well, I remember when I moved here 33 years ago, the pool was here. And I don't remember, my kids grew up in that pool, and I don't remember any major overhaul or construction, except the addition of the exercise room. But most of that equipment is second, third, and fourth hand, so it's not your Planet Fitness type equipment. But it's usable. It's, you know, weight is weight. You know.
So you've had a most recent conversation with the superintendent. What I've heard, second hand, third hand, is that they're going to continue to maintain the pool for swim teams, synchro bell,
school programs, yes.
What are their plans for the buildings, for the exercise room?
I think that's where they're looking at their options, and that's where they're seeing, you know, they've been in conversations with different groups about what to do with that building, and they're open to different suggestions. They're going through this more formal process to give everybody an opportunity to throw in a lease type agreement or some kind of a proposal. So that's why, you know, for city council and county commissioners to talk about the facility. Now, if they're going to mothball it, if they're going to just abandon it, now we're talking about it's time for a conversation with city county as to if there's something we can do with the facility. If they're going to keep it and they're going to continue to use it in some other fashion, it's premature.
There is one other thing that occurs to me, and one or two of the residents said this, that this kind of facility is not best run by a board of education whose mission is educating K-12. This is the kind of program that ought to be run by Parks and Recreation. I also heard that, whether it's truth to this or not, that part of the problem is lack of advertising. People aren't aware that this is available. If the board of education is at all interested, I, for one, would be willing to allow our staff to consult with them as a consultant and say, our recreation parks are, here's how you can put some together programs that will attract more residents, that will generate more revenue, and so on and so forth. I would be happy to provide our expertise to them if that's the direction they want to go.
Okay. I agree. I think we have a great parks and recreation, and they could do wonders with that. If they wanted to, I mean, it's still their facility, if they wanted to take our help.
It's all kind of ironic because it's almost like, okay, we'll help them draw to have people go to their pool, which takes them away from our pool, which our pool also is struggling financially.
The pool, to me, is not the issue.
Okay.
They're going to maintain the pool. Take from somebody who ran pools for a living for many, many years. You can't mothball a pool. You either keep it full of water, keep it chlorinated, keep it filtered, keep it clean, meet all the bacteriological health standards, or you drain the pool and leave it as an empty hole in the ground. If they're going to continue to use the pool, there's another pool two blocks away. So if you can't go to their pool, you can go to our pool, albeit not in the winter. It seems to me that much of what I heard was not the pool, it was the ancillary facilities. That, perhaps, we could work with them, because that doesn't pull away from our existing programs. Yes.
I think what you hear a lot there, what I took away from it, is a lot of the same conversation I heard about the golf course. It's not so much that we are crazy about the exercise or the golf, but we socialize there. We've been going there for years, all our friends go there. It's a great place for seniors to get together and socialize.
So, I mean, we're up against a deadline if the Board of Education is adamant that they're going to shut it down. But I would at least, if council thinks it's worthwhile, offer Luann's expertise. If you want to put together a program that will sustain the ancillary facilities, we'll help you, we'll work with you.
And basically we're asking them to keep it public. I mean, and we'll...
Sure.
Advice.
I mean, unless they have another plan. Yeah, they're going to turn the health club over to the school employees for a...
But if they had another plan, they wouldn't be coming to the city council looking for a blank check.
The Board of Education is not. It's the residents.
It's the residents. Who want to I just can't, I personally, cannot see a better deal than going to Planet Fitness for $10 a month. I mean, and there, it's not a, what do you call that? It's not a hump thing. I mean, there is no, everybody, I mean, there, I'm on the bike there, and there's old people, older people all around me. I'm an old people too. I'm an old people too. But, you know, there's not a bunch of teenagers running around going, woo, woo. You know, you can actually, they have tables. They have a sauna, what do you call it, massage tables and stuff like that.
Well, then you're up to $29 a month.
What, $29, okay. Whoa. But it's still, let me see if I do get something right.
Together.
Our pool is heated.
It has potential to be heated, yes.
It has potential to be heated. We don't, because we don't attract enough when there's already the heated pool open Right. Talking about the swimming racket.
Right. We were having it open 4, 5, 6 hours a day, and then it'd be a group that comes in and they swim
and
for 30.
Yeah. But we could, if volume required, we could be open longer periods of the year.
Yep.
And during the colder. Okay.
Yeah. There's a couple other points I wanted to make. One of them is that if the swimmers in particular, because that seems to be the one of the groups, is displaced. We have capacity at our pool. We can operate our pool differently than we do now. Now it's just kind of all open swim. You can do a swimming pool where you have programs for different type of swim, including a couple hours for seniors and open swim for all the families and time for sinker bells, time for swim teams, but we haven't had to do that because we don't have the volume or the demand. The same thing is true. If we had that pool full all winter long, it makes sense to heat it and keep it full. But when you have, an hour a day for six swimmers and the cost of keeping it heated, that's what we were seeing. That made absolutely no sense at all. So if we were to see people come and we could work out a schedule, we could work out a different schedule and accommodate right. the same people that were over there. That makes a lot more sense than trying to keep, and that's one of the reasons we shut down, because both pools were being heated with small groups in each one of them. So why don't we put all of them into one heated pool during the winter?
If the Board of Education shuts down access to the public, there will be a group of displaced swimmers.
Yes.
If they were to come to us and say, we're willing to join Free to Zamba, we could readdress the issue when we close it or whether we eat it or so on and so forth.
Yeah, all of those, including, we've talked to, in the idea of helping with recreation, yes. That is really what one of the focuses here is that, the mission of the school district should not be recreation, and that's exactly what this really
and
is.
And yet, the focus of Luann and her staff is exactly that.
Yes,
so I'm perfectly willing to.
We've talked about that.
Consult with them if that's consistent with their plan. I don't know what they have planned for the exercise.
Well, I'd like to see the numbers.
Yeah, and we'll get the numbers. I've got that note. I want to just make one other comment because my favorite superintendent would. I know I've talked to him enough about this, take real exception to the idea that, we haven't had this conversation in the community until just now. They've actually been having this conversation about adult ed for quite some time. Maybe not this one group didn't see it headed their way, but this is all part of their adult ed program, the corporate drive, which they've have shut down totally and incorporated more into schools. This conversation got started when they proposed a quarter-cent millage rate to the, on property taxes to keep these kind of programs open that the voters turned down. So they have actually been, in their world, been having conversations about the state's cut back. We have all these restrictions on our dollars. We no longer can take our educational dollars and support recreational type programs. And so it has been an ongoing conversation at the school district. I think this is just one of those kind of towards the end of the consequences of trying to stay within the much tighter budget than they've had before.
And be more focused on education.
That is absolutely the right thing to do.
Exactly.
Yes. So, it's like with a lot of things we do. People say, I didn't know anything about this when we've been talking about it for 10 years. I think that's somewhat of what's going on here is that the school district has been talking about this for some time and trying to get more focused. And a lot of it by mandatory because of dollars, and others just trying to get back into their core values. I've actually got a number of other things, announcements. One of them is your first budget hearing is tomorrow night, so you have a public hearing at 5:05. Yeah, it's a business meeting, so okay. it is at the community center. An unusual time, but the State law says it has to start after 5, so it's 5:05. And the Friday is 9/11, it's September 11th, and there will be a September 11th ceremony at Heroes Park at 8 o'clock.
8 a.m.
Yeah. You know, so everybody is obviously invited to.
And dress will be business casual.
Let me look at my notes here. We have a few other things coming up. I haven't got a briefing on it, but we had our waterfront cleanup this Saturday. Well, obviously,
some of us got cleaner than the water did.
Stormed.
Okay.
I'm 2 miles down the Graham Swamp Trail, and the sky opens up.
I did a honeydew weekend, and Saturday morning I was at home going to Home Depot to get stuff for my little project. It wasn't raining at all at my house. By the time I got to Home Depot, it was I got back home and nothing. So you know, it's all a matter of where you were. So I wasn't sure. In the future, this coming weekend, we have our Autumn Trail 5K run. We also start this weekend the Palm Coast and the Flagler Beaches Senior Games. That goes throughout all of next week. So those are some things to look forward to this weekend and throughout next week. One other item that some of you may have already, I know some of you have already heard. Wanted to brief City Council about a little change we're doing with Code Board. This came as a recommendation from our city attorney, is that our city attorney has been representing the Code Board at code meetings. Okay, so when our city attorney is representing Code Board, they cannot represent city staff.
By statute. Chapter 162, it's very clear. It says that the city attorney may act as the attorney for the board or for the staff, but not both, which makes sense. If you like representing a judge and representing a state attorney.
And what has happened to us a couple of times, it's not that often, but it's often enough that it causes some concern, is that particularly if we have someone represented by legal counsel at the Code Board and start making their position contrary to what we're used to, or you know, now city staff is not represented, and it's not a good situation. We've had some challenges where they try to find legal loopholes. If you may recall, Six Cole Place and that the swimming pool and notices and going through all of that, which then creates a interesting because as soon as the Code Board meeting's over, city attorney now is representing staff again. So it is not a good situation. So with the advice of our city attorney, we've gone through the process of selecting a special attorney just for the Code Board, someone that has experience in it. The cost of that is expected to be, I say, around $10,000 a year, which is within my signature authority, and this isn't a city attorney or anything. It's more of a professional, like we would hire an engineer or an architect and those type of things. So we've gone through that process, and the name of the attorney is, can you remember? What firm they're with?
It's a firm, and then they're not charging for driving, but they're a specialized firm like we are, and they just represent local governments.
Do you remember her name?
I do not.
Okay, I apologize.
Out of where?
Orlando. Yes, they represent local governments, and I have worked with this firm for over 20 years, not for them, with them, and have served on. As the attorney for a Code Board from their city, where if I talk long enough, I remember her name, hopefully.
Sneed.
Mary Sneed. Thank you. Mary Sneed. And Mary, thank you. And I've worked with Mary. She was on a Code Board where I was representing the Code Board, and she has worked with me in the capacity where I've represented staff for other cities, and she's represented code boards. I've worked with her where she's represented staff, and I've represented code boards for other cities. So this is what she does. She's my generation, so she's been doing this for a long time. The code board will be well represented, having Mary Sneed representing the City of Palm Coast Code Enforcement Board.
And that way, the city attorney and his team will represent staff throughout the process versus going back and forth. It makes a whole lot more sense. And, you know, once again, hopefully we don't need them very often, but there are times with that type of quasi-judicial process that you do get into the legal matter. So just wanted to bring you all up to date with that little change that we're proposing. Went through the professional selection process, mm-hmm. going through our typical purchasing mm-hmm. procurement process, mm-hmm. et cetera, to get to this point.
Let me add one thing, if I may. The only other real option that some cities choose, if they want to have code enforcement, is that they'll hire, like we do with animal control, or like we do with red light cameras. Some cities choose, instead of having a code enforcement board, which is made up of your local citizens, they'll have a hearing officer, or they'll have a special master. And that is not something that either your city manager or I felt comfortable. Obviously, that would be your choice. We'd have to amend the code to do that. But I just want to make sure you're aware of that. Chapter 162 does provide for that option. And it is, I'm actually a hearing officer for another city in Central Florida, where I act as a special magistrate hearing code enforcement cases. And I'd say it's more common in some of your smaller communities. But just make sure you're aware of that.
Mayor, that's all the updates that I have.
Mr. Vice Mayor,
move to adjourn.